Welcome back, everybody.
Welcome back.
Cheers.
The Sworn Sword Part 3. Hannah's drinking yogurt. It's different than usual. It's our third part of the Sworn Sword. And it was of the season. It was dark.
Yes.
It was sad at first. Whenever we were doing the reading for this starting out, I started to feel like maybe this isn't going to be a fun recording today. Mm-hmm. And then it went to a place where I felt excited about the story again. And my takeaway, I mean, it's not that I wasn't excited. It's just that I was sad at first. Sure. Hearing about burying Chestnut, that bummed me out in a big way. And thinking about all of our new friends dying brutally, that bummed me out in a big way. Seeing Eustace just looking at them training and not caring about whether or not they would succeed. And it just being about whether or not they fought, not whether or not they win or not, mm-hmm. bummed me out. But all the exposition that we got on what went down in the main squabble of the defining Blackfyre Rebellion was really neat. And I found myself thinking, oh, thank God there was something to take away.
Some substance for us to talk about.
That would last the whole episode. Sure. Because we're breaking this story, which you would sprint through it. If you, like we said months ago, reading this on the beach, mm-hmm. you would sprint through these parts. And I did sprint through these parts when I read it. But I really, really like breaking it down in pieces like this and having conversations about what we just read. Because so much of the might and the importance of what exactly the blocking was during that fight washed over me, and I'm excited to talk about it, not just in the context of how it affects this story or the people that are in this story right now, but especially how it affects how I feel about what's going on in the main series. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Because we know Brendan Rivers, Lord Bloodraven, is a character in the main series, and getting more context on the stuff that he did, mm-hmm. more so than we've gotten at any point, at least some of the stuff that we've read on the podcast. This is as much info as we've gotten about the Blackfyre Rebellion, what exactly happened within some of its most important moments. We know about the history. We know about who succeeded it. We know about the following fights. We know about Bittersteel. We know about how the kingdom ended up eventually. But a moment where another moment where Bloodraven is defined is pretty special. Mm-hmm. And for him to turn out the way that he's turned out in the story, but to have also lived through this, it's like, of course, this is what happened.
Sure.
But to find out in this way, to find out through, it's a side book, it's a companion book to the series, and to find out through a character like Dunk, for Dunk to have been told by inconsistent landed knight Sir Eustace. It's like, you son of a bitch.
I know. Well, it almost felt like Sir Eustace was talking to us because he was telling Dunk, hey, you think you know what happened, but I was there. So let me give you the background. This is actually what happened. This is what the singers are leaving out of their stories. It was closer than you thought. It was more intense than they can even... who knows what he may have been elaborating, like you said. Mm-hmm. This has been a long time at this point when he's recalling everything to Dunk. And he's just kind of blabbing on, mostly to hype himself up as he's reminiscing on his past glories. But I thought it was cool, an additional layer of like an aside of, hey, this is some insider info that we aren't going to get in the main storyline because these guys are long gone at this point.
Yeah, so if Tyrion was talking about it, for example, it would feel way more historical. Mm-hmm. And this still feels storied because we're separated from time and space, but this is someone who's there, and some of these people are still alive. And they're talking about Baelor Breakspear. He's only recently passed away.
I want to read the beginning of that. We can't read the whole exposition.
I have it all saved in my note
Maybe
app,
we can.
Just so you know.
Maybe we just should read the whole thing. But I definitely want to read the pieces about how he describes Bloodraven, but I want to get to the very beginning of that because I liked how he set it up. Like I said, it felt like Sir Eustace is kind of talking to us while also having that conversation with Dunk. And he starts it off in a little bit of a sneaky way by asking Dunk if Sir Arlen was for the Red Dragon or the Black. Mm-hmm. And Dunk's like, oh, like even now this is a dangerous question. It's been years and still having to...
I mean, it's like that in real life, too, a lot of times.
Right.
It's like, well, who do you vote for? Who do you like?
Vocalizing your allegiances.
So like you can't talk about politics at dinner.
No.
Because people will fight each other.
They will.
Imagine the Westerosi version when, you know, your sons died or your cousins died or your dad died.
Many good men fell that day on both sides, Sir Eustace says. The grass was not red before the battle. Did Sir Arlen tell you that? Sir Arlen never liked to speak about the battle. His squire died there too. Roger of Penitentiary was his name. Sir Arlen's sister's son. Even saying the name made Dunk feel vaguely guilty. I stole his place. Only princes and great lords had the means to keep two squires. If Aegon the Unworthy had given his sword to his heir, Darian, instead of his bastard Damian, there might not have never been a Blackfyre Rebellion. He would have been a knight someplace, a truer knight than me.
Damian. Damian?
Yeah, sorry.
That's listen, fitting.
It's spelled D-A-E.
Yeah, I know. I'll just leave the rest of it off. Like, I know that word. I've heard that word before.
Well, I'm realizing I'm reading a little too much. Anyways. A great battle is a terrible thing, the old knight said, but in the midst of blood and carnage, there is something also. Beauty, beauty that could break your heart. I will never forget the way the sun looked when it set upon the red grass field.
Oof, 10,000
men
of the chapter.
Had died, and the air was thick with moans and lamentations, but above us the sky turned gold and red and orange, so beautiful it made me weep to know that my sons would never see it. He sighed. It was a closer thing than they would have you believe these days. If not for Blood Raven... Then Dunk interrupts him.
He's like, wait a second.
Asking, I'd always heard that it was Baylor Breakspear who won the battle, said Dunk, him and Prince Maegar. The old man's mustache gave a twitch. The singers leave out much and more. And then goes on to describe the
you
battle.
You mean the hammer and the anvil? I had to do a double take when I read that again. I was like, wait a second. We were just hanging out with those guys.
I know.
So to be a part of history like that, Dunk left that context out a little bit when he was spying on them in the stables. Pretty dang cool. And so there's a long story there, and you say it sounds like he's talking to us. It definitely feels like what I was describing, the sort of a passageway the author gives us to tell us about stuff that we've only gotten cliff notes on from passing characters or references from people like Barristan the Bold or, like I said, Tyrion. So to have a firsthand account, it did just feel like it was being dumped from the page. And I don't know if we want to read that whole thing in this conversation, because I know that you just read it and everyone listening can read it on their own at home. But the significance of the blocking, the action, I love when action is so good. And I guess, in my opinion, it should always be this way, where it's telling a story. It's choreography is telling the same kind of story that you would emote through conversation, or you would expand it on a greater scale and have the truths between people act themselves out as well. When people are writing violence, that's, I think, really, other than just using your wildest imagination, the only real way to do it and for it to feel poetically sound. And like I said, for Blood Raven to be instrumental like this at such a crucial moment where the kingdom needed to be redefined after the Age of the Dragons makes him so much more of a mythical figure, you know?
Well, especially because we're talking about how he changed the tides of the battle, essentially. And then from there, we get the piece where... Near the end, I'm on page 165 of my copy, and he's talking about Blood Raven. He says, he rules us now as well. Make no mistake, King Aerys is his creature. It would not surprise me to learn that Blood Raven had ensorcelled his grace to bend him to his will. And so we're talking through like these crucial moments that happened in the battle, and then we're talking about magic at the same time and what he could be doing now. He doesn't specifically allude to anything then, but if we're going to have that in the same train of thought, then there has to be some assumption made that maybe he's been using these other enchanting powers in the battle, off the battlefield, and now as he's continued to gain power from that momentum. And so I loved that flow from the blocking, the dancing, right into, and here's like some mystical thing about this character that we, to this, in quote unquote, present day, see as this magical creature.
Yeah, and if he hadn't have turned the tides of the fight the way that he did, he might just be some weird-looking guy.
Some guy.
He's still Targaryen. They still have sex with their family members and marry brother and sisters, but he probably wouldn't have been that Blood Raven.
Some guy who's like wife or paramour bathes in blood and it's just like some weirdo that's down the street.
Yeah, so that's his half-sister, Sierra Seastar. Say that five times as fast. And we've talked about this outside the podcast. That's the person that Bittersteel is fighting Bloodraven for. Mm-hmm. Why don't we just read it?
Please.
And feel all of these feelings together. The hammer and the anvil. The old man's mustache gave a twitch. The singers leave out much and more. Daemon was the warrior himself that day. No man could stand before him. He broke Lord Aaron's van to pieces and slew the Knight of Nine Stars and Wild Will Wainwood before coming up against Sir Gawain Corbray of the Kingsguard. For nearly an hour, they danced together on their horses, wheeling and circling and slashing as men died all around them. It's said that whenever Blackfyre and Lady Forlorn clashed, you could hear the sound for a league around. It was half a song and half a scream, they say. But when at last the lady faltered, Blackfyre clove through Sir Gawain's helm and left him blind and bleeding. Daemon dismounted to see that his fallen foe was not trampled and commanded Red Tusk to carry him back to the maesters in the rear. And there was his mortal error, for the Raven's Teeth had gained the top of Weeping Ridge, and Bloodraven saw his half-brother's royal standard 300 yards away, and Daemon and his sons beneath it. He slew Aegon first, the elder of the twins, for he knew that Daemon would never leave the boy while warmth lingered in his body. Though white shafts fell like rain, I'm assuming these are weirwood arrows, which, what? Nor did he, though seven arrows pierced him, driven as much by sorcery as Bloodraven's bow. You can imagine him standing there. It's almost like he's the only one shooting the arrows. Young Aemon took up Blackfyre when the blade slipped from his dying father's fingers, so Bloodraven slew him too, the younger of the twins. Thus perished the Black Dragon and his sons. There was much and more afterward, I know. I saw a bit of it myself. The rebels running, Bittersteel turning the rout and leading his mad charge, his battle with Bloodraven, second only to one Daemon fought with Gawain Corbray. Prince Baelor's hammer blow against the rebel rear, the Dornishmen all screaming as they filled the air with spears, but at the end of the day, it made no matter. The war was done when Daemon died. So close a thing. If Daemon had ridden over Gawain Corbray and left him to his fate, he might have broken Mykar's left before Bloodraven could take the ridge. The day would have belonged to the Black Dragons then, with the hand slain and the road to King's Landing open before them. Daemon might have been sitting on the Iron Throne by the time Prince Baelor could come up with his Stormlords and Dornishmen. The singers can go on about their hammer and their anvil, sir, but it was the Kinslayer who turned the tide with a white arrow and a black spell. He rules us now as well, make no mistake. And you read the next part.
Small wonder we are cursed. Sir Eustace finishes off.
And this is no good for Dunk, because he's already been paranoid about this guy.
Right. Well, I mean, he's wondering if Egg's heard the conversation. He's like, what's Egg going to think about this? Somebody who's really close to all of that.
He's just a kid.
How many eyes did Lord Bloodraven have?
You want to hear someone like having such gossip about your family? That's a bummer.
I know. But he loves gossiping. He's gossiping about how to get with the girlies this whole chapter, which is something I really like.
I feel like he knows it would hurt Egg's
probably,
feelings.
Probably. You're right. He's young. I was hoping that like Egg would have some cool insight that Egg could be like, well, you know.
That's true.
This is what I've heard, or this is how my family talks about it.
Mm-hmm.
He's 10, so probably not.
I just think he's the kind type of kid that he would just get sullen. Like, he probably did hear this and he gets quiet for the rest of the ride.
Oh, maybe. Yeah, I didn't. That makes sense.
A white arrow and a black spell.
My God.
So he's in the tree right now with Bran. And in the book right now, he's apparently ensorceling King Aerys.
What a great word.
And ruling the kingdom as Hand of the King. And so, because Daemon decided to help Gawain Corbray in some way, or Gawain Corbray in some way, that small bit of weakness, that small bit of humanity, like choreography playing out in violent real time, is the opening that led to them falling in the end. So is it worth it being nice? Is Bloodraven actually magical?
Or is he just really... does he have a lot of intelligence? Like, he really reads people really well, understanding that he's the type of guy who would help somebody like that. And so taking the opportunity, I don't know, some people might see that as magic, even if it's not really spells. I feel like understanding how other people are going to operate is a huge advantage.
But you're forgetting about the tree. I mean, when you start to break it down like this, then you're like, well, is there actually magic in the tree, or is weirwood paste just the fuel of nightmare fluid?
Right.
And we're seeing so much. Like, those dreams that Bran had, are they just, I mean, is someone in Dunk's dreams right now at the beginning of the chapter or beginning of this part? Was someone actually in Bran's dreams at the beginning of AGOT? Was it this guy? Like, everyone speculates, was it Bloodraven passing him messages in his dream, or is it just a coincidence? Just like the fight turned in their favor because one domino fell one way, and Brynden Rivers has really good archers at his command. They're using what looks like arrows carved from weirwood, which I'm assuming are light, are very hard, so they go through armor, they fly further. And plus, they're just badass.
Right. The vibes are higher.
Yeah, the vibes are higher. But I know there's got to be some kind of, like, actual tactical advantage to using them.
Otherwise, why would you waste?
Exactly, because they're expensive. And those are really old trees.
Yeah.
There's way less of them. It seems like they grow a lot slower than regular trees. All those different things feed into it.
Well, maybe him being around the wood as it's being shot through
the air. Okay, keep going.
Does something to help his powers.
Maybe he can guide them.
Right. Or he needs to be able to draw on them to manipulate the situation or something. Or he can guide them.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. I mean, he can't guide normal arrows, but he can guide weirwood arrows
because
to the sky.
He has some sort of connection with.
I mean, he is the three-eyed raven right now.
Right.
So, I mean, but could we all have the connection? Let's say he's not magical. And let's say what is magical is emanating from some source within this world. Mm-hmm. And it's most obviously from its most natural spring. And its most natural spring, like the most ancient spring that we can find right now in the Seven Kingdoms, apart from whatever the hell is under the God's eye, is this natural manifestation of ancientness itself, a really old, rare tree. There's not a lot of them, but it's from a way further long ago time. Maybe that is actually magic. Mm-hmm. But if you start questioning Bloodraven's magic, then I start to also question the magic of the potential magic of the weirwoods. Mm-hmm. But I understand the magic of the weirwood paste. Mm-hmm. Just like,
because you've seen it in action.
Yeah, but also it makes sense. You're consuming something. Mm-hmm. So biologically, something weird could happen there. When you cook food in a certain way, it tastes different.
True.
If it's fresh, it tastes better. If you have a good combination of spices, you might like the thing that you're eating a little bit better.
Or so many plants can do so many things
like
to
kill
your
you.
Brain or your body.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. So maybe there's nothing magical about the weirwoods at all. We have all these questions. And when we read the main series, we get there's moments like this, defining moments throughout the whole story. But we don't have a lot of it about things in the past. They're usually tales that are just briefly mentioned in passing. Most of the stuff is about what's happening right now when Jaime and Brienne are in the Riverlands. That's what we care about. But we hear snippets. We hear passing asides about it. So getting all of this information about what actually went down in this very important fight at the Redgrass Field that everyone talks about is neat. But more than it being neat, there's just this really direct window into why someone that is so important to the main series right now is thought of to be so powerful. And he seems like he is powerful, but
right.
If it is chance, or if it is just the way that the gods fated it, the way that the dominoes fell, and there is no intervention from some skill that he has, some sorcery that we don't know about, the evidence is here. But just like everything else, there's also the other side of the evidence, where this could be evidence of actual sorcery itself.
Right. It makes me think about when you said, like, is it chance or something? If, because Bloodraven's already the storied man, maybe he just did a really good job in this battle. Like, he did a really, really good job, and it seemed like, wow, how could he have done those things if he didn't have any extra knowledge? He must be magical. And then from there, the rumor grows about his,
right.
Not based on him actually doing any sort of real thing other than having good luck or a great read on the situation. But now we've got someone like Sir Eustace out here
perpetuating
it, like all the other people in Westeros are perpetuating it, singing about it. And so now he does have magic because his girly bathes in blood, and he was able to use this really ancient cool tree that no one else is using as his arrows, even if they weren't magical. It just adds to his grandeur.
They could be better wood. But yeah. So you're saying that they might not even fly better than like a yew shaft.
The whole thing is just cooler because he's dressed cooler, he seems smarter, and he has better weapons. But then he gets this storied reputation.
Because they won.
Mm-hmm. And then from there, because he's so good at his job and he has a million eyes everywhere, mm-hmm. it seems like he has this magic. And then from there, either he starts to wield it or this continues to just be like a facade. I haven't really decided. Like when we're talking about A Song of Ice and Fire as a whole, mm-hmm. and we're talking about magic in A Song of Ice and Fire as a whole,
mm-hmm.
I haven't really decided like where I fall in the camp of, do I want magic to be real or do I want it to be, oh, George R. R. Martin has this really cool trick of making us think that magic is real, but everything can be grounded in reality. And so we see why the smoke baby happened. Like there's an explanation for it, you know? Mm-hmm. I haven't decided on like where I would
fall. About to bring that up. I was about to be like, I raised you one shadow baby.
I don't know where I fall. I mean, we've seen magic be real so many times in A Song of Ice and Fire, but there's something kind of intriguing to me about it looking real and it being real enough to make people fear you, but it's actually not real. Is that actually going to apply to Bloodraven like throughout his whole trajectory in A Song of Ice and Fire? I don't know because of all the stuff with Bran, but like at this point in time in the Sworn Sword, that's an intriguing argument to me.
I want more glimpses.
Yeah.
Whenever Alyssa Farman is in some far off isle and the trees are sagging heavy with fruit, then I'm like, it's just people that don't have cell phones. You know, they just think that magic is real because they don't have cell phones. And some people know how to train birds to fly for hundreds of miles, mm-hmm. you know, or the seasons are caused by an errant rotation around a star.
Mm-hmm.
And it can all be explained without there being zombies.
Or like the book that we're both reading right now about the cult, mm-hmm. and they're levitating in the church.
Yeah.
But
yeah, they're using a... You know how they're, you haven't finished it yet. Yeah. So they're using Pepper's ghost.
Oh. Well, I knew.
Well, it's already mentioned.
No. I knew that like somebody was trying to explain. He's like, I'm showing you how to, my friend used to levitate
because he thought
it was funny.
Yeah.
Yeah. Things like that. So, you know, there could be a lot of, like you said, there's not cell phones. So, there's people can do magic tricks, you know?
Mm-hmm. So I read stuff like that and I'm from this story and I'm like, oh, I see. You're just sailing really far and it's scary and you don't have a lot of food or water and you don't know where you're going. The maps don't go this far. And so, I mean, look at our own history. Mm-hmm. Look at our own history on this mm-hmm. planet. That's what we all believe, that kind of stuff. Most people still do.
The Earth is flat.
Well, everyone knows that. That's a fact.
Well, but then my question is for you, like, okay, well then what about Bran, you know?
That's what I'm saying. What about the Shadow Baby?
Yeah.
What about Bran? I feel like the Bran stuff, I tried to crack into it a little bit. There's some pretty direct arguments from old discussions way back in the podcast where we just read and talk about what kind of dreams Bran was having mm-hmm. and how some of them feel different than others. Some of them feel like direct interventions. When everyone dreams in A Song of Ice and Fire at a certain point, we've all speculated, is this a real dream? Or are they been giving some kind of vision from Bloodraven, really?
But so who was it that dreamed about Dunk?
Daeron the Drunken, dragon dreaming. Is that the same as the green sight? Yeah. I mean, how many different kinds of dreaming do we have, right?
Right.
They all have different kinds of names. But again, that's something that could be explained just by saying that someone dreamed something,
right?
That your subconscious pieced it together. I mean, I don't think that there's a sorcerer coming into my brain giving me weird stuff to think about when I go to sleep at night.
Sure.
But it could be possible, I guess. But I wish. I love that we're asking these questions. And in this same part where the story began for our reading today, Dunk is having a really visceral dream
right.
that seems like he's being told something very specific from a certain source. And so I think we're supposed to be thinking about this, especially because this is released, this Night of the Seven Kingdoms, Dunkin' Egg, is released in the context of the main series. And so if you're the person writing this, you're alluding to all these things in the main series and you're touching on some of them. And this successor material is where the opportunity has been taken to flesh out and give us more details. And as we as we mine more into this, we're supposed to be thinking about this. We're supposed to be thinking about Bloodraven. We're supposed to be thinking about him as a person, how he affected the people when he was young and spry, and what he might be up to now. And so when you think of him in your mind, not knowing or not discussing rather what he did before he got sent to the wall, before he became Lord Commander, from Hand of the King until Bran. What else did he do? Mm-hmm. Why did this happen to him? I mean, it seems like a lot of us believe that it was all on purpose, that he wanted to get beyond the wall. He wanted to go to the tree. Mm-hmm. So can you think of anybody else that surrounds themselves with confusing things that seems wicked and not understandable and uses strange weapons to make himself seem more mysterious in the story? I think of Euron. Uh-huh. So it's not limited to one person can't be like that. And so you start to think, well, maybe anyone could be like that if they committed to the bit that right. hard.
If they had a flaming sword. Like exactly. If they set their sword on fire, right. Then all of a sudden they're this storied savior.
Right. It's tough for Stannis to do it because his outfit is very normal.
Yeah,
he doesn't inspire a lot of confidence, which is Renly's whole issue with him.
Right.
So all that being said, if he would have not succeeded in this way, if Gwaine Corbray had just been left dead where he was bleeding out on the battlefield, he would not have had the same open shot to take down the three-headed dragon. So and we wouldn't be thinking of him like this.
So did he plan that ahead of time and set the pieces in motion, or?
Well, he couldn't make Daemon think that way, because that person made a choice. So that I think adds to this whole discussion, where if we know that it was happenstance, of course this all banks on Eustace being right or not, but if we know that the success of his quick and easy assassination then with his raven's teeth was not from some mystical lightning bolt that shot out the sky, but it was just the happenstance of mm-hmm. a violent affair, mm-hmm. then I think we're supposed to put that in context of where we decide it goes. Mm-hmm. And so the fact that we're still sitting here talking about it, I don't think it needs to be said, but just for me to you, that's some fun ass writing.
Yeah,
I agree. Make me still not be sure, especially right. when I've seen, I mean, the scene, air quotes, the Shadow Baby.
Well, that's what I was saying, why I'm still on the fence about just magic as a whole in A Song of Ice and Fire, because there's so many instances of either way, and Bloodraven is riding the line down the center of it in this particular story. And so I don't know if we will ever see where the chips end up falling. I guess what happens with Bran's storyline may, because we're in Bran's head, we may get a little bit more of a personal view of, okay, what is it actually like to be a guy like that? Maybe those will be answered, or maybe not. Maybe that's the whole thing about it. Is it supposed to be?
Like maybe it'll never be.
It'll always stay
ambiguous.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
I get that. I totally get that. It's like when I was talking to you about Final Fantasy IX, one thing I really loved about that story is that it very similarly did that. And this isn't the first time a book has been written like this. Trying to get, as an artist, it's like you're trying to paint the Mona Lisa. You're trying to get to the closest adaptation of your imagination. And your imagination could be a lot of things. Organizing it into words or into thoughts could be a lot of things. But when you try to artfully organize it so it makes an impact more clearly and with as a tool instead of on accident, I think a really neat way to do it is to have that juxtaposing point of view constantly close to each other, more mimicking the possibility of there being life after death, more mimicking the possibility of, are ghosts real? There's all of these questions that we have and we don't have a clear answer. So like he does with Fire and Blood about history not having a clear answer, magic, if we want to call it that, sorcery, also does not have a clear answer. Sometimes it seems more clear than others. Sometimes it's as visceral as salt pans when the hound is bleeding out and dying.
Right.
It can be as real as that, as trees hanging or as fruit hanging heavy on a on a tree, or it can be Melisandre giving birth to a ghost that goes and kills someone.
Or Lady Stoneheart. I mean, there's so
many. Oh, yeah, I totally forgot about Lady Stoneheart.
There's so many.
Okay, so magic's real.
Yeah. Or it's not, because Beric and what's his name? Thoros, they're coming using this ability to come back to life with.
It could just be like.
They have really great medicine. They figured out a really good combination of plants.
Yeah.
They have penicillin now. So, you know what I mean? So.
Right. Yeah, I mean, you would need some kind of penicillin. They probably use some kind of mushroom because she has to throw hold her throat closed in order to make sounds that make sense.
There's a lot of things that go into it. But it's really fun to have Sir Eustace talk so...
For him to be the vehicle.
Almost like bombastically. It kind of reminded me of, you know, when you're like in an Uber and your Uber driver is talking about something.
Yeah.
And you're like, but then they kind of say something interesting. Mm-hmm. And so, but you don't want them to keep talking, but... Mm-hmm.
You're like, it's so hot. Yeah. Will you please stop talking? Right. It smells bad in here.
That's the vibe I was getting. But it was such a great vehicle, for lack of a better word, for this information to come out.
Unsuspecting one.
I was not expecting it at all, especially because, I mean, this chapter was mostly about this big dream that Dunk was having. And there was a lot of...
Well, it's about getting to Coldmoat, too.
Yeah, like it's just... Exactly. Yeah. There's a lot of like... bad vibes in this chapter because they feel like their little ragtag army does not have the ability to even stand in a straight line while a horse charges at them. One singular horse, and everybody's like, nothing's gonna happen. Dunk's having this really bad dream and he thinks everyone's gonna die and he feels all this guilt. And even Sir Eustace is saying, you know,
maybe we need a fortnight.
Yeah, maybe we need to do a little something different, but I can't go do it myself because I made all these weird promises to myself. And also, I'm kind of old and tired.
Promises to myself. I won't interrupt you, but what the heck?
Exactly. So the vibes are.
And Dunk did it for Chestnut died because he was trying to find a girl.
Man, but she was tall. She was not too tall for him.
She's not too tall for him, and she seemed really nice. Yeah. And she had great, she could use those hands really well. But for the love of God, he's thinking about the Watts, and he's thinking about Chestnut, and he's thinking, and then of course when he thinks about Egg, then it really falls apart because he really loves Egg, clearly. Is it worth the lives of people just to trudge forward with this plot that who does it serve? Mm-hmm. You know, it served him, and there was also a little fun to it with Egg when they went to Dorne. But right now he's talking to Eustace is
useless.
He's either actually losing it or he's manipulating Dunk.
I think he's one of the two.
He tells the same story a couple times, but then he swats that fly really deftly. So was he just making it seem like he doesn't know what's going on, so he physically doesn't have to go to Cold Moat himself because he doesn't want to bear the shame of demanding their water supply back? Okay, so not. So then he's potentially putting the lives on the line of some green boys for a guy who doesn't even care how this turns out for him because he has dementia.
Definitely. Like, when's the last time you hung out with like a grandpa? You know?
Yeah. They're like, magic is real. There is life after death. You guys will be fine.
Right, exactly.
But he's not saying that, but he definitely believes in it at least. So he feels really bad. That's why it felt dark for me when I was starting to read this. I was like, man, and it's late. We usually record earlier in the day. And I was like, I don't know.
Drama trying to record.
Yeah, I mean, technical difficulties. The whole thing was weird. But the thing that really rescued it for me, that just makes my mind a light on fire, is thinking about Bloodraven, whether or not he's a magician or not, or has sorceress abilities or not, thinking about him on a ridge and taking advantage of a moment in a fight to rise up to a much higher place than he is really quickly.
Chaos and shooting a bunch of weirwood arrows. That's why they want to go to war, baby. That's where men are made.
Yeah. Moans and lamentations. Is it worth it? I guess there's no way to avoid it sometimes if you give the wrong guy the crown. What a chaotic thing that guy did by giving it to the bastard son and causing all this.
It's interesting to hear Dunk's musings on the is it worth it question as he's trying to be an honorable knight, and he's giving Eustace his honest opinion about that these boys aren't ready to go out to battle. Mm-hmm. And I think that I like the idea that his dream at the beginning is just a nightmare, you know, because I think that that is so much of a character building moment for Dunk, and just how stressed he is and how much he wants to be like true and good, and he wants to really genuinely protect the people around him, and so he can't sleep at night because these lives are in his hands. And Sir Eustace is who he is, and their land is being taken away from them. So the stakes are high, but they're also really low. And that's why this was the other question. I don't know the answer.
You sound like Venice right now.
Whatever this boot thing is, am I supposed to know what that is at this point?
It's just him getting help from back home.
But how? I guess I don't know the answer to that.
It's like a thing that he's got that he can go, look who I am. And he's hiding it in his boot.
Oh, like a little ID card.
Coin.
I was like, is there some weird sort of situation that I missed that?
By situation, what do you mean? Like he's got an iPhone 15 Pro
basically.
In there?
Basically.
Like, look at like, this. You think sorcery's not real?
He can send a quick message and all of a sudden there's...
You can FaceTime the like, king. He's on suddenly, the Iron Throne.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I was like, am I supposed to know exactly what this means other than, okay, so he's got some sort of identification in there.
It's like, remember...
But he's still 10.
Yeah.
So what is he going to do?
That's
roll up in there and be
the
like, look at me?
That's
and it's
the,
like,
there's always that risk too. Yeah. We face moments like that in the main series all the time. Mm-hmm. All the time.
She's killed 4 husbands. Suddenly Dunk's not thirsty anymore. This might not be the time to try to pull your trump card out mm-hmm. because you're still a kid, you know, at the end of the day. A pretty powerful one.
Especially if the spider lady drowns all these people, like you said. It sounds like she would probably just eat you instead.
Well, and they're so far
away
from King's
Landing.
They're
in the bottom of all that water that they have.
Exactly. How long is it going to take for anybody to find out about anything?
Mm-hmm.
Egg's been missing forever.
Unless Bloodraven really can see across time and space with his many eyes.
Okay, so my question is that just a line that keeps coming up because we're supposed to be asking questions about Bloodraven? Or is something going to happen either now or later where he does see something and something reacts?
Well, I think we're supposed to constantly be thinking about the fact that he's the three-eyed raven, for one, and a thousand eyes in one, three-eyed raven being able to presumably see through time and space. Of course, we're all just saying that that's the thing. T-Wow could come out, though, and we could just be completely wrong, and it could just be weirwood paste. Also, imagine if he hadn't won this fight. Them saying he has all these eyes could be a really mean way to make fun of him for only having one.
That's so true.
So again, just like things being magical, things being alive or dead, it's right on the edge of the knife where his weakness is a strength right now because he's so mysterious. His outfit could be hilariously bad mm-hmm. and you can make fun of him for dressing like Johnny Depp from Pirates of the Caribbean.
or
when he wins like this, you know what I mean? Then it's like, damn, this guy's crazy.
It's
he doesn't know anything we don't know about.
Let's see. Okay, this is show you're on versus book you're on.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah,
like
exactly.
Show you're on.
Yes. They were afraid to commit to the bit, but they committed
mistake.
To other bits. Yeah.
They committed to the wrong bit. I love Pirates of the Caribbean more than anyone. But
you got
to
have someone that's a thespian to pull that shit off. That's why they didn't have Will Turner act that way.
Yeah, right.
That would have been, imagine him. But remember when he does try to dress like him later?
Yes.
Like he's more piratey later?
It doesn't do it for
me. Exactly.
It doesn't do it for me.
Yeah.
I was always, well, anyway.
Whenever he does bring up the boot, I said it in the last podcast, it feels creepy.
Well, that's why I was like, am I either something else is going to happen with it
mm-hmm.
that I don't know about, or am I missing something that it does something weird?
That's just good writing because it's transporting you out of the moment. It's making you think about, at least I think this, I don't know. It's making you feel the space of Westeros and how almost anything's possible because this is such a powerful person. And also it makes you forget that he's 10 years old because there's so much
for
like
sure.
deep command to the moment. And he's able to do that just referring to something. That's pretty neat.
So there's nothing, like he doesn't have a phone in there.
No, there's probably not a phone there.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And people have money, so it could just be, what if it's one golden dragon? And it's like, I will give you this if you don't kill
me. Right. Or it's like a picture of him on the Iron Throne, like smiling, like with his thumbs
up. But someone painted it, though.
Right.
But you could paint that.
You could paint anything. Yeah. Just like the girls used to paint themselves really nice looking and send it off to their lovers.
Yeah. Then they rode for leagues and leagues and they were like, what is this? And then they sacked the castle, stole
That's
it.
That's rough.
Made her their salt wife and ran away. I have a question for you. Mm-hmm. Does the gallant, how did he describe it? Gallant compliments?
Oh, gosh.
I'm Ron talking to Hermione. Hey, you're a girl. Does that work? Like as you're reading this, because I know how it is from my point of view. How is it from your point of view?
I'm twirling my hair. My favorite part of that was when, they were like, well, what if there's nothing to compliment them on?
That was good. I want to read that. Yeah, you keep going while I find this.
But if there's nothing, then am I supposed to lie? And they're like, well, there's, I can't remember who said it.
Daeron,
like,
the dragon dreamer. He's constantly drunk in a pub. He's got something to say.
Listen, you know when it's fake, you know?
Oh, come on.
I know when it's fake.
Well, that's why he's picking something specific. If she has nice hair, he can say it and make it sound real.
Okay, like a guy from 7-Eleven rolling down his window and saying, your hair looks good. It's like, I already know that. So
right.
It's real.
But that was a real compliment.
But it didn't feel good.
Right, but imagine like he was like, you are, I don't even want to go there, never mind.
You magnify my eyes.
You magnify my eyes.
Just read it, because this part of the chapter, it was so wildly obvious to me that Egg was 10 and Dunk just really wanted to be in with the girlies. And so I loved their back and forth.
Gallant compliments. I wanted, for the sake of this conversation, to look up the definition of gallant, even though we feel it when we read it. Brave. Okay, so a brave compliment. I'm asking, does that work? I'm thinking, to be brave, it has to be bold of you to say it, right? Mm-hmm. It's not something that you would obviously say. So maybe talking about her hair isn't as effective as something that's deeper. You have to make a risk. It has to be riskier. It has to actually be brave, gallant. And it's got to land, too.
That's why Dunks is more stressful than just being on the battlefield.
He's like, I would rather go fight Blood Raven right now. Okay. So Daeron says, this is Dunk and Egg talking. You know, sir, tell her how fair and beautiful she is. Dunk had doubts. She's outlived 4 husbands. They're talking about Lady Ryan Weber. She's outlived 4 husbands. She must be as old as Lady Vaith. If I say she's fair and beautiful when she's old and warty, she will take me a liar. If I say she's fair and beautiful when she's old and warty, she will take me for a liar. You just need to find something true to say about her. That's what my brother Daeron does. This is a 10-year-old boy. Even old ugly whores can have nice hair or well-shaped ears, he says. Well-shaped ears? Dunk's doubts were growing. Or pretty eyes. Tell her that her gown brings out the color of her eyes, the lad reflected for a moment. Unless she only has the one eye, like Lord Bloodraven. God, will this guy leave us alone? What a lovely gown, my lady. It brings out the lovely beauty of your beautiful colored eyes. That's one of Dunk's thoughts. Let's just say that one more time. What a lovely gown, my lady. It brings out the lovely beauty of your beautiful colored eyes. So, as you look through the book, did any of this wash over you? Did it work? Is this like,
I want to read this other.
Create a spark?
I don't know how to talk with highborn ladies, he confessed as they were pouring. This is different from what you read.
Yeah, it is.
Lady Vaith was mad, Egg reminded him, but you could have been more gallant. Ladies like it when you're gallant. If you were to rescue the Red Widow the way you rescued that puppet girl from Aaron, Aaron's in lease and the widow's not want of rescuing. He did not want to talk of Tansel. Tansel too tall was her name, but she was not too tall for me. Well, the boy said, some knights sing gallant songs to their ladies or play them tunes upon a lute. I have no lute. Dunk looked morose. And that night I drank too much in the Planky Town and you told me I sang like an ox in a mud wallow. I had forgotten, sir. How could you forget? You told me to forget, sir, said Egg, all innocent. Da 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 da. So I have no loot.
I have no loot. Dunk looked morose.
Yeah. Like he thought it was a real option to
in
there and play her a little song.
So would that work?
Listen.
Someone plays like a song on a lute to you?
I don't think so. For a lady like the Spider Lady, the Red Widow, She's killed four of her husbands. She is a big fish in a little pond. Mm-hmm. She seems scary. Even Sir Eustace doesn't want to go over there. She seems scary. And so that's why it's like, I love the advice that Aeg is giving Dunk because it's so pure. But I just don't think that that's going to work. You know?
Okay.
I just don't think it's going to work. I feel so scared thinking about it. But I thought that was a really sweet exchange between the two of them because it was so genuine and innocent, you know?
Another bath, Aeg said dismayed. You washed yesterday. And then I spent a day in armor swimming in my sweat. Close your lips and fill the kettle. You washed the night Sir Eustace took us into service, Aeg pointed out. And last night, and now. That's three times, sir. I need to treat with the highborn lady. Do you want me to turn up before her high seat smelling like Sir Bennis? Oh, come on.
You can't let your boy go in smelling like Sir Bennis.
When in the dream, Sir Bennis's mouth starts foaming red with the sour leaf. That dream was cool.
The dream was very cool. And I was really, I know there was a lot of big things in this chapter, but I was really blown away by the cadence of that dream and how everything started to kind of deteriorate. It felt like a real nightmare where it feels so real. And then all these weird little things and you're like noticing the little detail. Mm-hmm. Why is his mouth foaming? I thought they were just chewing on leaf, but actually something, this is a nightmare.
Yeah, it's a nightmare. He's dead. He's also evil. Also, that thing is bad. Also, it defines him so much. And it would be in my dream like this.
And it escalates. It escalates. And then all of a sudden, Aeg is drowning in the sand. Yeah. It just goes so quickly from being reality to
falling apart.
It's a nightmare. I just thought that the pacing in that was so well written.
It was good. There were red mountains in the distance and white sands beneath his feet. Dunk was digging, plunging a spade into the hot, dry earth and flinging the fine sand back over his shoulder. He was making a hole, a grave, he thought, a grave for hope. A trio of Dornish knights stood watching, making mock of him in quiet voices. Farther off, the merchants waited with their mules and wains and sand sledges. They wanted to be off, but he could not leave until he'd buried Chestnut. He would not leave his old friend to the snakes and scorpions and sand dogs. So at this point, it seems like maybe it's just a flashback. Mm-hmm. And a little bit further on, the Stot had died on the long, thirsty crossing between the Prince's Pass and Vaith with Aeg upon his back. His front legs just seemed to fold up under him, and he knelt right down, rolled onto his side, and died. His carcass sprawled beside the hole. Already it was stiff. Soon it would begin to smell. Dunk was weeping as he dug, to the amusements of the Dornish knights. Water is precious in the waste, one said. You ought not to waste it, sir. The other chuckled and said, why do you weep? It was only a horse, and a poor one. Chestnut, Dunk thought, digging. His name was Chestnut, and he bore me on his back for years, and never bucked or bit. The old Stot had looked a sorry thing beside the sleek sand steeds that the Dornishmen were riding, with their elegant heads, long necks, and flowing manes, but he had given all he had to give. I mean, it feels like the beginning of a POV chapter from the main series.
Mm-hmm. I've really, really liked that opening. It felt real.
Yeah, it took me
and
by
it was
surprise.
Really sad. The whole Chestnut thing. Of course, that's what he would be dreaming about. You know, I thought that was really sweet. Then, I loved how Sir Arlen was like, "You never cried for me."
Mm-hmm. And then Doug later reflects that he didn't cry for Chestnut either.
Right. Right.
He wanted to, but he couldn't. A lot of turmoil. A lot of turmoil will start this off. And you know what? I noticed that his life's not so bad right now.
Dunk?
He had that dream, right? But then he gets up, especially after just dreaming about the desert, we have to save water, and goes directly to a well and is able to splash water on his face.
Cold water on his face.
Right. And he's got a fat tallow candle that he can just light.
Yeah.
So he's got a light source.
And he's had three baths.
He's got a private room right now.
Yeah.
He's not sleeping outside with pigs.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot going on here. And I think that when you think about Dunk and Aeg, you're like, oh, it's a less deep A Song of Ice and Fire story. It's not in the main series. It's about someone named Dunk and someone named Aeg. So you can skip it. But that's what's so funny?
Me 6 months ago.
I did say you, didn't I? But it feels that way. But I think it's so neat that that's not the case. And there's a little bit less, there's less nature description. This, we could stretch these moments out into full length chapters from the main series like normal. But as far as the stuff that we're supposed to be noticing is still all there. There's just less hand holding.
Mm-hmm.
That's just what's happened. It's just less handholding.
And out of seven kingdoms is for the real ones.
And it's tricking us by their having such silly nicknames on the cover of everything.
I know. George, we like what you're doing.
He's trying to trick everyone, but I'm not going to be tricked. I want more Lord Bloodraven. And so I'm wondering, what else do I have to read? If you want to do Fire and Blood Part 2, go for it.
Right.
It's a neat way to continue to fill out how excited we're supposed to be about the next book. And it's also a neat way. Well, that's really it. All the anticipation is getting doubled down, tripled down on the more of the surrounding universe stuff that you ingest. Not everything that has surrounding universe content, TV shows, movies, books, not all of them are doing that. I don't know. I can't think of any that are doing that. But there's also this neat situation where we're still waiting for 6 and 7 mm-hmm. or whatever else. So to have that opportunity to be taken, I just hope that everyone that's paying attention feels how fun and special that is, because it's takes so long and so much work and so much care to want to execute it in that way, rather than just to do like JKR did with Harry Potter, just to like bang, 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 get them out there. If there would have been, if whenever you read Quidditch Through the Ages, it sets up something that's going to happen in Half-Blood Prince.
We thought it would.
But it never did.
But we thought it might.
But it never did.
The Hanged Man theory, you know?
What's that?
Inside the book, inside the front of Quidditch Through the Ages or Fantastic Beasts, I can't remember which one, there's that Hangman game that Ron and Harry are playing, and Ron ends up dying.
Oh, yeah.
In that game.
Mm-hmm. Or when they're talking about the switching spell in book 3. Mm-hmm. Now, that's from the story itself. And so it's normal for there to be breadcrumbs laid. But what's not normal is the amount of breadcrumbs and just context that we're getting that builds the full picture of stuff that's yet to come.
It's like the MCU, but better. Because there's too much in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. There's too much ground to cover, you know what I mean? Like, you get lost in how much ground there is to cover.
Well, especially if you only watch 5 minutes of each movie right. Like you did.
That's a stop. Okay, that was a you and me thing. We did that together.
I've seen Thor.
One thing I also really appreciate is how George gets to flex some different writing styles and some different writing abilities, because Fire and Blood is so different from Night of the Seven Kingdoms.
Yeah.
It is so different from A Song of Ice and Fire, A World of Ice and Fire. I mean, all of these different types
of... The TV show, too,
yeah,
is different from
exactly,
all those.
Which,
yeah.
You know, him being able to write on all of those things and, like, show off his prowess in so many different ways within the same universe, that's so fun.
I don't know why he's letting everyone figure it out on their own rather than saying it. He should be like, guys, look at this awesome thing that I'm doing.
It's more powerful this way.
It's more powerful, but I want people to notice it. I want them to go, listen, it's in there. There's a point to this. It's not that, oh, where's the new book? It's like, this is all a thing that's happening to you, and it's not happened to you like this before. So just let it happen. And the guy that fell on the battlefield, maybe you'll leave him there, or maybe he'll get taken away, and maybe the right thing or the wrong thing will happen next. Either way, it's not in your hands, and you don't have magic, as far as I know. So maybe it'll seem magical if it is executed successfully. No pressure.
No pressure. It's working out very well so far, though, and I feel really happy that we have this little gem that I had glossed over for a long time, so... Glad we get to do it together.
So we're leaving the story on the edge of Watts Wood. Sir Useless has turned around. Still don't know if he is actually losing his grip or not.
Mm-hmm.
Could be a really good way to get out of doing stuff. Mm-hmm. Could be the truth. And on the next part, we're going to be meeting the Red Widow.
I'm so stressed. I'm so
scared.
What
if Bloodraven's there?
Nah.
That's his other wife.
No, it would fit with the theme.
Yeah, okay.
It would fit with the theme.
Let's do owns.
I'm going to give my own to one topic that has two different parts to read while you look for yours. And my own is going to go to the fact that Sir Eustace would have married his kid or his daughter to Dunk if she had been alive. You're a good man, Sir Duncan, a brave knight and true. Sir Eustace gave Dunk an arm squeeze. Would that the gods had spared my Alysanne. You're the sort of man I had always hoped she would marry. A true knight, Sir Duncan, a true knight. A couple of paragraphs later, we get to the bath with Egg. Egg's annoyed about the bath, and they're arguing about how to talk to girlies. And Dunk leans over. There's a great picture of it in the book. He leans over to Egg, like, here's the picture for you. Sir Eustace said, I was a sort of man he hoped to have his daughter wed. Her name was Alisande. She's dead, sir. I know she's dead, said Dunganoid. If she was alive, he said. If she was, he'd like her to marry me or someone like me. I never had a lord offer me his daughter before. His dead daughter. And the Osgraves might have been lords in the old days, but Sir Eustace is only a landed knight. I know he is. Do you want a clout in the ear?
And then that was so funny. I'd rather have a clout in the ear than a wife.
Especially a dead wife. Sir Eustace said I was a sort of man. She's dead, sir. That was so good. So on my own to that. Sir Eustace's daughter, rest in peace. She would have loved, you know those you know those memes that are like, if so and so was alive, she would have loved like hot Cheetos or something.
Oh, yeah. Like Joan of Arc would have loved hot Cheetos. Right.
Yeah. It's like if Sir Eustace, if Alisande was alive, she would have loved Dunk.
Honorable mention to Prince Valar, speaking of not being alive, who between the Hedge Knight and the Sworn Sword died from the Great Spring Sickness.
Rest in peace.
You were mean?
A hater in both stories.
Yeah. He wasn't very nice in that dream. Another shout out to Dunk accidentally destroying all the shields that they wove together during the other day of training practice.
That's why he was fed up.
Yeah. He was like, listen, Bennis was pissed. He's like, hey, oi. He's like, listen, man, they would have been busted up in battle anyway. It's better that we got that over with now. Okay, own one. You will save Sir Bennis from Dake's faith. I know it. I am no mean judge of men, and you are the true still. You will give them pause, sir, the very sight of you. When that woman sees that Standfast has such a champion, she may well take down the dam of her own accord. Either really sweet or really manipulative. Let's see. Either I have no loot, I saved the smelling like Sir Bennis and his dead daughter. You got all of mine. So that's it for me. I'm going to give it to Bloodraven too for either picking the arrows that suited his cause for a tactical purpose.
Curious to know what everybody else's thoughts are. And so if you would like to either send us an own for the chapter or just send us a message. Do you think Bloodraven's magic is legit or do you think he's just
obsessed
really
with Spirit of Halloween?
Yes. I would love to hear what people have to say about that.
We have an own from Ghost Chase Killa on Twitter. Own to Damon Blackfyre for being so awesome of a dude that half the realm rose for him.
You can, if like I said, if you want to send us your owns or your thoughts, you can find us on Twitter or on Instagram by searching for Game of Owns.
Yeah, you can go ahead and send your owns for the next part, which will end after the opening conversation with, I don't want to say anything else in front of Hannah. You guys will know whenever you read the next part. We'll put it out on Twitter and Instagram as well. And we're thinking about our Halloween special. At least I am thinking about our Halloween special.
Please tell me more.
I don't want to talk about it now because I haven't completely thought about it yet. But you guys will be the first to hear whatever the plan is. So stay tuned and buy a pumpkin for your house.
We'll see you really soon.